Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Happy Mama Movement Podcast. I'm Amy Taylor Cabaz, mama, journalist, coach, and founder of Mama Rising. This podcast is a space of community and collaboration. We gather stories of matrescence, motherhood, womanhood, and change told by our Mama Rising coaches and mothers around the globe, in the knowing that through our stories, we can begin to heal and change the way the world sees, values, and supports mothers everywhere. So, welcome to the Happy Mama Movement. And welcome to our special partner series. I have been exploring, researching, and coaching mothers around motherhood for more than a decade. And during that time, so often get asked, what about the partner? Is there something called patrescence? Do they go through similar identity shifts? What do dads feel as they become fathers? And how can we understand that experience better? And that is what this special series is dedicated to. I searched for three experts to explore different aspects of partnering as you become a partner and a parent. And this is what I am so excited to share with you today. And in this final episode in this special series, I interview Dr. Oscar Serelak, author of The Postnatal Depletion Cure and GP, about his experience of becoming a father, but also how the dads and non-birthing partners can understand what's happening to their partner, how they can understand what matrescence is, and how they can actively support her through this experience. I think this episode in particular is great to send to partners in preparation for birth. All of the episodes in this series can be shared with your partner so they can understand how you are feeling and you can understand how they are feeling. Hello and welcome back to this podcast. Oscar, you have been probably my most regular person that I have reached out to over the last decade to come back in and speak to me and this amazing community of women around the world about matrescence, postnatal depletion, motherhood, parenthood, what we need to understand and do better. So thank you for once again saying yes to these conversations.
Hi, Amy. It's always great to talk to you, and we're going to be covering some new things today, which I think is going to be exciting.
It's important, right? I don't know about you, but over the last decade of having these conversations, there's always that trying to understand what matrescence is and how we can understand the process of becoming a mother better. And then the follow-up question is, well, what about the dads? What about the non-birthing partners? Which is why I really wanted to start 2024 with this series. And we are acknowledging in some of the other interviews the very unique and sometimes similar changes that the non-birthing parent experiences, both in their identity, in their body, in their brain, in their hormones. But I wanted to start with you first. As a dad, a husband, but also in your clinic over the years, what led you to be so passionate about trying to understand this and speak about this differently? Because I know it started almost as a personal reflection on what you were seeing.
Yeah, and you know, my journey started as a bystander, really. I was very interested and very enrolled to becoming a parent, but I really didn't know what was on the horizon. You know, I definitely can be guilty of what I call Pinterest parenting, kind of going, well, I think we'll do a little bit of this and no thumb sucking, and we're going to do this kind of sleeping arrangement, and just without any real experience, I think, like many of us. And I was lucky enough to live in a community that was quite alternative. So there's quite a smorgasbord of conversations that were going on in terms of different styles of parenting, different approaches. It wasn't just kind of the all the same quite narrow bandwidth that I think a lot of pre-parents, you know, may experience. And early on in our first pregnancy with my partner, she said to me, "Darling, I think I want to have a home birth." And I was I'm trained as a GP, and I'm very sad to say I kind of like went into a state of shock and was like, "Oh my goodness, you know, we're going to be one of those people," not even knowing what one of those were. But I was certainly taught to, as a medical person, that home birthing was really risky, was, you know, people who did that were not responsible. So I was just towing the line on that. And then I started to go, well, look, we're in a community where home birth is quite common. And I had another dad who was also a GP in my community just kind of tapped me on the shoulder one day and said he had had two home births, and he wasn't, he was a very, he wasn't someone that was doing anything particularly risky. He was very straight, you could say. And he just tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Oscar, you'll be fine." And that's kind of all I needed. And I started then doing a lot of research about home birth and realized, oh my goodness, it's in some levels safer to birth at home than in hospital. And once you start looking at the research, there is a very different conversation that's not a yes or a no regarding where a mother chooses to birth. And I was lucky enough to have three home births and have, you know, quite profound experiences with those as a father. And I just was fascinated by what I was seeing happening to my partner and to my friends and to a lot of the clients that I was sort of seeing in the hospital. And I could just see the toll that it was taking, not only on my partner's body and her mind and her soul, essentially, but everyone just seemed to get this huge drain from the experience and this huge activation. And it was both of these things happening at the same time, and I was like, wow, what is going on here? And I kind of got to the point where I realized there's a pattern going on of this kind of hyper awareness going into hypervigilance, going into anxiety and worry, and then sleep disturbances. Emotions would be kind of going on a roller coaster, then a lot of odd physical things, and then this fatigue that's not like fatigue you've experienced before. I mean, that's a classic mum fatigue. And I was like, oh, okay, I can see a pattern. I'm just going to go to the textbook and read it because things aren't going so well at home. And
nothing.
As you know, there aren't any textbooks. There's no and I searched, you know, different search engines, you know, medical ones, looking at libraries, different languages. I actually hired a Dutch doctor who couldn't get work in Australia for 8 hours a fortnight for, I think, 8 months maybe. She was looking in German and Russian, and I was looking in Spanish and English, and we were just kind of downloading everything. And the list was pretty short at the end of that.
Oh my gosh.
And to be honest, I was kept on coming across these postpartum practices of traditional cultures. And initially it was annoying because it was like, oh, just another traditional culture thing. I want the medical stuff. But once I kind of realized it wasn't a whole lot of medical stuff there, I was like, okay, well, let's have a read what I think most people have some interest in traditional cultures, and I started reading their practices and what they're kind of doing. I was like, oh my goodness, they're describing this activation issue and this kind of wobbliness, very different language, of course. And they've got these elaborate customs and conventions and time of confinement and everything to, and these are cultures that have never, ever had anything to do with each other, saying the same thing. And I was like, okay, well, that's the pattern. And I sort of started digging down into traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda and really got a lot more knowledge about the descriptions, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I've been very lucky because I wrote my book in 2018. Even then, the first published paper of note that had come out about the mother brain was 2016, published 2017. I mean, it's
mind-blowing.
It's mind-blowing, bordering on criminal, potentially.
Okay.
But since that paper came out, the amount of research that is happening is incredible, and it's really starting to blossom.
Mm.
And so I feel so fortunate to be part of that wave in terms of just, I've been very lucky to meet a lot of the top researchers in various parts of the world. And every 3 to 4 years, I have a parental brain symposium, which is about the mother brain, the father brain, the parental brain. And then the next one's in Spain in, not next year, but the year after, 2025. And there are a lot of people researching this. So it's a good time to be interested.
I mean, you and I could do a whole podcast, and we have had conversations in the past about the frustration that it's not until 2016 that this starts to even be a blip on the radar of the research. But what I would love to hear from you in terms of this conversation is that when a partner sees those things that you just explained, which is both the draining experience of childbirth and postpartum and those months afterwards, and also this activation, this completely new version of herself coming through, when you see that and witness that, and because we've never been taught about it or explained what that is, for you yourself first, and then also what you would love dads and partners to understand, is what would you like them to know about that?
Well, now the experience as a willing but perhaps quite naive dad was extremely humbling. I could see that my partner had the superpower. And this superpower was to be in tune with this new being to a level that's extraordinary, just in terms of their needs and where they're at. And you can see that they're having a conversation without words. But that doesn't happen straight away. I mean, there's kind of... there's a really beautiful, quite awe-inspiring part of the whole parenting journey. It's not all just exhaustion. But then the sleep deprivation, and then it's like, why is no one talking about the sleep deprivation as something you've got to get ready for and prepare, not just, and joking about mum sleep and mum brain and just kind of expecting that those are expected sort of injuries that you're going to get along the way. And then, another observation that I had at that time was, we had quite amazing antenatal time, lots of classes, lots of education, lots of people being very supportive. And as soon as the baby was born, it was like the mother was forgotten. And it was all about the baby. What's the baby doing? And is the baby okay? And is the baby gaining weight? And it's just like, not about the potential casualty that's It's trying to be in tune with the baby. And yeah, it can be very, and with our third child, I mean, an analogy I often use that we had quite a large garden. And we were eating a fair amount of food from the garden. After the first child was born, the garden got smaller and a bit more ragged. After the second child, smaller and more ragged. And after the third child, small and pretty much abandoned.
I think that
analogy in terms of just because of the bandwidth that it takes to look after one child is huge, and then the chaos factor that can happen when you've got more than one child. And I was working full time, was on call. I really tried to make sure I had gaps of hours during the day where I could be not working, but I always had to be, I was on call for the local hospital pretty much most of the time. And so it was a very distracting experience for me. And the other thing I really observed is the heightened emotions, that there might just be a baby cry, or there might just be something that in a previous rendition of mum life was a pretty small event would suddenly become this volcanic event in terms of the emotions and the upset and the uncertainty that could, and mothers can really be their own worst enemy sometimes in terms of the self-doubt and the self-blame, and I'm just not good enough and I'm not doing enough, I'm just not trying hard enough, and all this kind of self-dialogue that's going on. And and I've really come to a place now where that's most of the time is totally incorrect, but that's how mothers feel. We just don't support mothers, and that's certainly in terms of having had this experience, it had lots of beautiful moments and joy moments and flying by the seat of my pants and what is going on? Am I losing my mind? Is my partner losing their mind? And all going at very high speed sometimes. I've come to the realization it's all about having support.
Yeah. And so when a partner walks in at the end of the day and is greeted by, I've heard this a lot over the years of coaching so many women over the years. Even recently, I've started coaching dads in preparation or in those first early months of postpartum just to begin to expand the support. I hear things like, I used to be able to run a multi-million dollar company. I used to hold board meetings, Amy. I used to be able to deal with prime ministers on the phone, talking about myself in that way. And then at the end of the day with the toddler and a baby, and I like the smallest thing, I can't cope with this anymore. I would love to hear you reflect on what's happening there in terms of the level of depletion, the overwhelm, the hormone, like the hormones, everything, so that when a partner walks in, begins to see what he's seen in front of him or they're seeing in front of them. And I say that with such compassion because in my work with dads recently, what I've heard is the question, which is the title of this podcast, what happened to my partner? Like, she was so capable and so amazing, and I'm maybe worried, but also I don't know what's just happened. And so can we put a little bit of perspective and understanding around that, both for her and for the partner as well?
Yeah, and mothers are not trying to be difficult or emotional or absent. And the research is a bit complex, but if we kind of really make it simple, because of the placenta, the mother has a lot of deep internal brain changes. Yeah. By being a parent and just by the act of caregiving, you get a lot of external brain changes, the wrinkly parts of the brain. So, dads, partners get those. But we don't get the internal brain changes. And there are very key parts of your brain that are uprated, your stress response system gets fundamentally changed. And so what I'll often say to dads or to partners is, listen, you know, your wife or your partner's going, she's going to develop a number of superpowers, and one of them is that she can feel ennui because of the amount of oxytocin receptors that are, and the modifications to the stress response center and the hormonal response center of the brains. It's like, and she can't switch that off.
Mm.
But everything is about we. It's not, oh, I'm feeling upset. I mean, you could just substitute the pronoun, just put we for everything. And you'd have a better understanding of what's going on.
Mm. It's that whole analogy, if they're not okay, I'm not okay.
Exactly. And sometimes it's not just the mother and their child. That's what it's designed for, I think. You know, all the reward systems also get co-opted for the mother to get rewarded by her baby. They think possibly the reward pathways are there for parenting and mothering and not for gambling. And if anything is affecting that, she will become very unsettled. You know, it's like a factor times whatever you've experienced in the past. So if something's not okay with the baby, there's going to be a factor. And then if there's something not okay with us, whatever us is, it could be the country. It could be my street. It could be the family unit. I've certainly seen during the pandemic that us get very wobbly.
Wow.
And it causes that hyper-awareness, which is normal, to go into hypervigilance. Hypervigilance then goes into worry, the what-ifs, catastrophization. And if it keeps going, you know, even thoughts of self-harm and baby harm are actually very normal parts of that runaway train. Even though most times it's not even a remote possibility, but the thought train is just so, just going at full speed. And her ability to be able to regulate her stress also gets affected. Wow. Her hormones will get affected in a way that can really promote fatigue and anxious thoughts. Postpartum rage is something that's not really sort of talked about either, and that's all just part of these mechanisms of the brain that's trying to recalibrate, starting to spark almost, if you like. It's like an engine running too hot.
Can we talk about that for a moment? So the brain is trying to recalibrate, right? So that we've just been through this massive change and we're trying to figure it out and understand why we're suddenly so distressed by everything that we're seeing, or, you know, what you were just saying about how the we are not okay can be so much bigger than just me and my child. I mean, my eldest has just turned 16 and I still feel that. I still feel at times almost irrationally upset about we are not okay. So that was a really, thank you for putting that into such powerful perspective that really hit home. But I'm trying to understand. So the brain is trying to reconfigure how we're thinking and we're seeing the world and we've got all of these changes. But at the same time, we've also got that beautiful tsunami of no sleep, isolation, usually, perhaps, and learning new skills. Like, we're also trying to, you know, figure out how to feed and what that cry means and all of that. So all of that together, that's the postnatal depletion that you talk so beautifully about. That's the thing that we really need to understand about this time.
Exactly. So there's a time of vulnerability, and a mother's hormones and her body hormones will then help recalibrate the brain fluctuations. So that kind of how easily the brain gets anxious or how easily the brain can sort of feel calm. And safety is something that a mother needs like she's never needed it before. And oxytocin and that is part of that. Now, if you could put safety into a pill, you know, you'd need to be giving that, you know, 10 times a day, as it were. But the interesting thing about safety is, like, you can't even measure safety. It's purely an experience that you have. And everyone's probably different about what safety feels like, but you can get a sense of what safety isn't, in terms of many people or lots of loud noises or criticisms by other people or just, you know, the barrage of things that mothers can experience. And so I really try to promote a sense of safety, whatever that is going to look like for the partner and for the mother. Get a sense of what helps promote that, because that's going to make the mother's brain and the father's brain work better. And then how do you make up for the lack of sleep? So that's a really, really important discussions around that. You know, the average sleep loss is 700 hours in the first year. The average adult needs about 3,000 hours. It's a pretty big chunk. But you can be okay with 700 hours of sleep loss if you plan for it and prioritize it. I believe a lot of this supposed baby brain and the forgetfulness of mothers and this inability to do what seemed like pretty straightforward tasks previously relate to too much overwhelm, prolonged sleep debt, and a bunch of hormones that are trying to get back online, but struggling or perhaps, you know, really erratic in their production, and that the brain doesn't like that. And, you know, something you alluded to before, which I really like, is this idea of learning. I mean, if you're going to provide a classroom environment for someone to learn, what would that be like? You know, is it going to be quiet? Probably. Is it going to be full of distractions? Hopefully not. And so you can take some of those elements into the home environment, which is essentially the classroom for the baby and the mama.
That's so true.
And then, as you've talked, you know, you would have talked about a lot of this idea of having different metrics about who you used to be. You're not who you used to be anymore. But there can be so much role conflict that can happen as well. That I'm a partner, I'm a sister, I'm a neighbor, I'm a daughter, and all these kind of roles that we have. Neurobiologically, mother goes first, whether you like it or not.
Wish they told you that. Wish they told you that. Didn't know that one going in.
Yeah, smack bang, top of the pile, nothing you can do about it. And this is challenging.
Well, it's challenging if you're not prepared for it, both for the mother and also the partner. And I think in the series, in all the conversations I'm having around partners within this experience of matrescence, it is, we all just need to be aware that this changes everything. And when neither partner knows that or expects that, that's when resentment and breakups and that's when that all happens. If we could just all know, she's not going to be the same again, and neither are you. And that's okay. Let's talk about it, get ready for it, and check in with each other along the way. That's the reality we all need, right?
That's the mud map, yeah. In terms of, yeah, just going, this is kind of a brief outline, but what you're used to and what that's that was a nice part of your life, hopefully. And everything is going to be different now.
Yeah.
And you have to nurture your previous, you know, your sense of who you were, but really embrace the new person that you're becoming. And becoming a father, you really can grow as a human being. It's such an amazing opportunity to develop skills in ways that you could never do unless you were there looking after your little ones and, you know, getting your hands dirty and trying to take chunks of the sleep loss and really sort of being involved. And I really feel for partners and fathers who don't have the opportunity to be involved very much because of work commitments or because of there can be a whole lot of issues in our modern society. And that and you touch on an interesting point here about resentment. So they reckon that a mother has bungee jumped about 12 months ahead of the father or partner in terms of their evolutionary journey, in terms of what they're thinking is important, what the kind of conversations they want to have.
Wow, 12 months.
And this is why the partner comes kicking and screaming a lot of the times, going, I'm not quite ready to have discussions about where the kids are going to school because they're still in nappies, but this is kind of what I'm meaning. I mean, that's just a very
I agree with you, but I also hear it, Oscar, in the coaching sessions around the partner isn't quite ready to accept the changes within the relationship because they're still not fully seeing that everything has changed yet. Like the level, I would imagine, because as you said, all human beings involved in the birthing and newborn experience brain changes and hormonal changes, but there isn't that extra element if you were the birthing parent. If that bungee jumps us further along that path, then we have to have compassion for each other, the way I see it. That while I'm 12 months down the track and I'm now thinking about, well, when the baby wakes and if that happens, whatever, he's still like, yeah, but can we just go back to what we were, because I really miss that, and why can't we have that? And we have to be patient with each other in this level of accepting that everything has changed. And so often the birthing mother has the benefit. It's a freaking rough road, but we have the benefit of our body making us accept the changes quicker, perhaps, than the non-birthing parent who's just like, yeah, but can we just connect like we used to? And her body's like, nothing's the same anymore. Like, that's a huge gap that I wish we could be more compassionate about.
It is. And ideally, it's not the mother encouraging the partner on that journey. It's our, that should be encouraged by involved others. And I really encourage dads to, specifically dads, to seek out father role models that they quite like.
Yeah.
And ring them up, talk to them, whatever language is appropriate, going, hey, listen, mate, I really admire the way you kind of do your dad thing. I mean, can we just sit down and have a cup of coffee and just, I'm about to be a dad myself, or I've got a little young one and I'm just, I just really need some tips, or sharing stories between dads is very powerful, and especially fathers who are a little bit further along the journey than you are can gain insights that are invaluable. It's not about the advice stuff so much, but really listening to another dad's wins and losses and just where they were like, oh mate, I did not know what was going on for a while there, and just things came good, and that may be enough in terms of having shared a story, rather than this is the new normal and whatever that means. And something else I really encourage fathers to really sort of think about is intimacy. I'll often say, because I have a lot of couples coming in for postpartum planning, and typically towards the end of the pregnancy, so just in part of it, we talk a lot about the neurobiological changes of the brain and also about what's happening for the dad or the partner. And then I really try to encourage the couple to have discussions before the baby's here about certain topics. And some of it's just very transactional about getting lots of food and making sure that that's all sorted for the first 6 weeks. But then the whole communication and connection side of things. And I'll tell the fathers, look, mate, if that's kind of appropriate. Things are going to change. You're going to go from a, you know, kind of this, especially for the first child, you know, this romantic, you're going, you know, from a romantic love model to a mature love model.
Mm.
And this just needs some exploration. There's a new language that sometimes you have to learn, and you have to really redefine what intimacy is. That's the key part. And I really love Esther Perel's definition, and I'll often sort of say this, that intimacy is a place that you go, not something that you do.
Mm.
And you know, you can sometimes see, you know, the dads who are, you know, struggling with that conceptually. And the other thing I really encourage is about resources. I mean, an under-resourced male is going to really struggle and is not going to know where to turn to when things are getting challenging.
Do you mean resources, so about, in terms of knowledge, support, places to go?
Exactly. Resources in terms of skills, in terms of books, podcasts, apps, friends, even governmental helplines. Just, it's good to know what the whole landscape is and go, okay, if this is getting worse, at least I can, there's a couple of places I can call professionals, and then I can, you know, I've got one dad who I've been keeping tabs with, and he kind of knows that I'm not doing so well, so I can call him. And so that's your resources.
Thank you for pointing that out. And we do have a list of those in the show notes. Just recently I've become a Gidget Foundation ambassador, and it just blows my mind, Oscar. My eldest has just turned 16, and the difference in the support and conversation around dads now compared to 16 years ago, I'm sure you feel the same. Like, nobody was talking about this very well for mums, let alone the partners 15 years ago. It's really exciting and also frustratingly late, but at least it's starting, that we are here. We are acknowledging that this change, when you become a parent, is huge, and we have to put different preparations around it. We have to be more honest about it. We have to acknowledge the impact it has on so many different areas of our life. And it's great that we're finally doing that for the non-birthing parents as well.
Yeah, and I think intergenerationally, you know, this is how we change. You know, it's and that's always been my goal, and I'm sure your goal is that for our kids, this has to be easier.
Oh, amen.
And my oldest is nearly 18 now, and it's just, you know, he's living in a different world with different values, different language as well. And you know, his journey is going to be very, very different if he decides to go down the family pathway. But it's and they don't have naivety. I mean, this is the thing that I think is a big difference between our generation and their generation, is we were pretty naive in a lot of ways, and we didn't necessarily have access to information. And then there's always be the older kids who kind of knew a bit more than us, and then, you know, the misinformation that we were probably getting. Whereas, you know, they've bypassed that.
Yes, I often say to my kids, my Google was the schoolyard. That's where I found out most things. That's not good.
Yeah, there are risks involved with both options, but
but I do hope that, I mean, I agree. I think our kids, what we are doing, not just you and I, but all of us in these conversations and in the way that we're bravely sharing the stories of vulnerability and struggle and joy and like you said, the activation that we experience through parenthood, the more we can be honest about this, the more we change it for those future generations. And as I said before, the intention with these conversations in particular was to bring that that gap between the new parents perhaps a little closer, that compassion for each other, because that's something that's been incredibly heartbreaking over the years to hear so many stories, and in my own experience, that I didn't know what was happening to me and I felt so isolated, and neither did my partner and he felt so isolated. But actually, if we could see each other with that compassion of, oh my God, you don't know what you're doing, neither do I, this is terrifying, are we okay? If that could just close a little bit and I find what I need and he finds what he needs, then maybe that enormous space between the two new parents will close a little.
Yeah, it's a very loaded situation, unfortunately, and very intense, and a lot of beauty and the potential for sparks in there. And we really need other people in our corner.
We do.
To kind of help us as well. I mean, if you look at traditional societies, the mother got pretty much 0% of her emotional needs from the father.
From her partner, yes.
And they were kind of pretty involved with the life. So we just have a pretty unique sort of situation. But like you say, compassion is so important. Creating space when there isn't the strong emotions is really important as well. Mm-hmm. Because if you're honest, having conversations when someone's either sad or angry, I mean, they don't often resolve much, and they're not really where the conversation needs to be. It's like whenever you're having an argument or a friction point, they're just signs that you need to have that conversation. And I think that's but in a very different kind of way. Mm. And I think the biggest gift that I've experienced being a dad is, and it might sound a bit strange, but it's around the fact that I don't have to really think, what is it that I want to do? Because as an involved dad, that's kind of a bit of an irrelevant question. It's much more about, well, what do we need to do at the moment? And because of being in that space and not being just me, the depth of my experiences and the places that I've been and been able to share have been much deeper than if I was kind of I'm going to go fishing today, or do I want to go and hang out with my mate? You know, it's just that kind of, you know, perhaps what a lot of pre-dads are kind of used to. And it might sound odd, but it's like the ego can just relax. It's like, I don't have to really, you know, that me just really starts to quieten down. And I really have found that to be a silver lining that I was not expecting. No one ever sort of told me that, but it's been something like, oh yeah, it feels good just to be doing the right thing almost, and then just playing with your kids. It's like, that's the best thing. And you don't often or school projects or things that you're kind of like, well, who wants to do a school project? I mean, but that act of, well, needs to be done, and then the interactions that kind of happen, it builds experiences that can be remembered about years later that were quite meaningful and profound.
Wow, I love that. That is an absolutely beautiful way to finish. Thank you so much. Thank you for all of your work over this time and your continual support and jumping on this podcast with me. We will put all of your resources in the show notes for both mums and dads and people who work with birthing parents, because you also have practitioner support and so many amazing resources. So thank you, Oscar, for your wisdom and insights as always.
Well, thank you, Amy, and to all you dads and partners out there, just wishing you the smoothest journey possible. And yeah, it's a journey.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Amy.
Thanks as always for being a part of our global Matrescence community. Please take a moment and make sure you're subscribed to this podcast in your podcast player so you can always be notified of our next episode.
And if you would like to work with a coach on your own experience of matrescence, please go to mummarising.net and explore our directory of phenomenal coaches, workshop leaders, space holders and facilitators around the globe. You can also explore our Global Matrescence Foundation and consider donating so a mama in need can access the support of one of our coaches and still ensure that our coaches receive the income and support they need so they can continue to work in this way. And finally, if you would like to be a coach, a facilitator and a matrescence activist in your own community, jump on our wait list for our next intake of the Mama Rising Facilitator Training at mummarising.net. Thank you for being here and being part of this movement. Until next week, bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.